You're listening to Signal to Noise, part of the ProSoundWeb Podcast Network, proudly brought to you this week by the following sponsors. Allen & Heath, introducing their new CQ series, a trio of compact digital mixers for musicians, bands, audio engineers, home producers, small venues, and installers that puts ease of use and speed of setup at the heart of the user experience. RCF, who has just unveiled their new TT Plus audio brand, including the high-performance GTX series line arrays and the GTS 29 subwoofer. Be sure to check it out at rcf-usa.com. That's rcf-usa.com. I wish I could break free, back to where I'm supposed to be. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Signal to Noise. I'm Andy Levis. Over there is my buddy Sean Walker. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm partying, dude, aka drinking coffee and doing paperwork, you know, life of a sound business owner.
Yeah, there is not enough coffee in the world for me today. So we've talked before about how in New York, one of the important observant weeks is upfront week for event professionals. The other one that we haven't talked about yet, and that I've disavowed myself from for like 14 years until this year, is Fashion Week.
So you're just a glutton for punishment this year? You're like, fuck it, we'll do it?
Apparently, which, and I mean, unlike Upfront Week, I assume Fashion Week is a little more self-explanatory and a little wider known.
Models in short dresses, I got it. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, or in this case, models in weird sneakers. This is like the Puma Mostra line.
I mean, I'm into both models and weird sneakers, so I'm with you, dude. I like it.
There we go.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I was doing a Riedel comm programming for that all week, and then I'll be doing another one in a couple days. But it was last night was like the 12-hour day till like it was supposed to go to midnight, and we got cut at 11 p.m. after the show, which was a nice surprise. But
nice. All right, let me ask you while you're on the Riedel flop, dude. What does that, for us normal people here, what does that do for you that something like FreeSpeak doesn't? Is that hella more flexible?
To an extent, yeah. I mean, the biggest obvious two things on the wireless belt packs, which is the Bolero is their wireless,
yeah,
is you've got six keys instead of four.
Which is nice.
On busy corporate events,
nice.
Even that's sometimes not enough. But like totally. Four, I'm always having somebody who it's like, well, which channel do you want to trade?
So it's always on reply. You got like a fifth channel on reply for somebody every time. And yeah.
And
I've used Bolero. It's great. I was just like, in your perspective, how does it, you know?
It's the ability, like there's more flexibility in reply. There's like, it's a lot of the same features, but more expanded. And then you can do cool logic stuff. Like if you're doing a full system with an artist frame, like I had a wireless pack as the comm programmer, but a desk panel on my station. And I was able to set it. So when I keyed either one, it would duck my volume and only my volume to the other station, so it didn't feed back when I was talking next to the other one.
Yeah, word. That's cool. Awesome.
Yeah, and the fact that, and like, first I figured out how to make it dim just the whole speaker, and then I was like, wait a second, I can actually just dim the cross point, so I still hear everybody else at full volume. It just ducks myself down, so it sort of becomes like a weird, like, private mix minus only when I'm keying in.
That is very on brand for your nerd ass, Andy.
Yeah, very on brand. Yeah, it's, you're
that's
not
why wrong. We like you, bro, because you bring the smarts to this joint.
Or I just beat my head against the stupid enough until it seems smart.
Is that what I'm doing wrong? Not enough head beating?
It might be. It might be. But yeah,
well, that's cool.
This week was an adventure because it was the performance artist was Earth Eater. If folks know them, and it's very lots of low end drone-y stuff.
All right.
I learned what about 115 dB of 42 hertz sine wave does to the human body, and poop. It's simultaneously very pleasant and very unpleasant. Let's put it that way.
Poop.
not quite, but
brown note.
There was a point that my laptop started popping Windows calculator open over and over again from the vibrations. I have no idea how, and I was like, I hope nobody needs anything on comm till the performance is over, because I literally have no control over my computer right now.
Oh my goodness, dude.
It was an adventure.
Man, the Riedel thing is pretty cool. Back, but we have one client that since we're on comm, we have one client that's in a, let's call it a giant Faraday cage for their thing, and the FreeSpeak has been a little challenging, but we went to IP transceivers, which worked great. And then, and I'm not sure why, because I don't know, but I do know that somebody smarter than me was like, oh man, you need to use the IP transceivers and be better. And we also tried a Bolero rig, which worked great in that situation. And people like you or Aram are smarter and could tell me why that is. But it was cool that it's a different, it's somehow different in the way it transmits the audio and stuff, that it worked better in this very challenging environment than just straight up FreeSpeak did.
Yeah,
although like, FreeSpeak's been great for us and, you know, every other bog
store. Yeah, I mean, they're using the same, like, general frequency, or they're all using that DACT DECT, you know, 1.9 gigahertz, and but they're using it a little differently. So they get, like, different channel counts. Like, Bolero can get 10 belt packs, so they recommend 8 to an antenna, whereas FreeSpeak, I want to say, is 6, so they recommend 5.
Yeah.
So the same idea. It which has to do with how they're multiplexing stuff and shit that I don't even understand.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but no, it's definitely, it's super powerful, especially when it's in a frame. Like, I've done lots of Bolero in standalone mode, which basically makes it like FreeSpeak where it's all in the
browser. I've only used it in standalone mode. I haven't used it in its frame.
Yeah, this was with like a full artist 1024 frame, so we were doing like 50 packs of wireless.
Yeah,
it gets a little wacky because some of the stuff you're doing in the Bolero web UI and some of it you're doing in the director software, but once you figure out what lives where, it makes sense, and it's super powerful.
And is that frame you were just talking about, is that comparable to a high port count Arcadia, or is it the next one up in the ClearCom world to do the same kind of thing that you got going there? Or do you remember?
I'm not up to date enough with the finesses of the current ClearCom options to know how they break down. Like, this is like, this is definitely like the top of the line. Like, the 1024 is the brand new one that has all the modular cards. So like, it now has a Dante card that you can use as four wire Matty card. And apparently they're basically, it's the same card. It's just they reprogram an FPGA inside it to, you know, which is nice, because that means they only have to build one card and then just populate it and flash the program that you buy.
Yeah, we gotta buy a. I just shit the bed right there, bro. We gotta buy a frame. What did I just say it was called?
The Arcadia.
Yeah, we gotta buy an Arcadia frame this year, and a bunch of FreeSpeak, and mostly because that's what people are calling us for specifically is FreeSpeak, and what I can rent the most of here. I was just curious, since I've used both, and dude, the Bolero was awesome. It was great. It was just different. Like, once you learned it, you're like, oh man, that's kind of the same thing, just a little different. And, you know, you're pounding away at the thing.
Yeah. And the other thing I like about Bolero when I have my mixer hat on is, which I think some of the new FreeSpeak packs have, but it's got Bluetooth integrated, which means that I can use the Shox OpenCom, like, bone conduction headset. So I can have my ears open on a corporate event.
Yeah, dude. Totally.
Which is cool. And it'll also work in the other way. So if you need to get a remote caller into com or remote audio into the system some other way, you can connect the belt pack as a headset to a phone. And then and you can use it two ways. You can use if you're on a wired headset, you can just take phone calls in the headset without having to switch to your Bluetooth buds all day.
Oh, that's cool.
Or you can send the audio back to a conference.
Oh, that's pretty sweet. So I don't need an LQ like you would in FreeSpeak World.
You can just do that LQ. right off a Bolero pack.
Oh, that's dope. Bluetooth.
That's pretty sweet. And it'll charge off a USB port. So
I kind of wish more people were asking me for that, because that seems like it's dope.
Yeah, it's expensive though, but
it's, I mean, without giving away the farm, it's not that much more expensive, bro. It's, you know.
Yeah, by the time you fully flesh it out, when you're looking at Arcadia, it becomes more. It's like when you're looking at Bolero.
It's 10 or 15% more. It's not 100% more expensive. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it is more, but it's not like life-changing difference in expensive.
Yeah.
But you really, like, I own a sound company, so I got to buy what people are asking for, not what I'm like, oh, this is the nerdiest thing that I want to use. It's like, what's everybody calling me for? They're all calling me for FreeSpeak. Right, so that's what we're going to get.
So you've been hearing him chime in. We haven't actually introduced this week's guest.
Sorry, Dave.
This week's guest is Dave Unger, who I was saying before we signed on, I feel like I've known Dave forever, both between like the Pro Sound Web Lab and through relatively recent guest Andy Peters' Facebook. Dave and I are both Peanut Gallery in his comments.
Right.
And Dave reached out recently and was like, hey, you've had like a whole bunch of my friends on. Like, if you know, you ever so need somebody else Levis? To come on.
Where
like,
am I at?
Pretty much. And I was like, hey, what are you doing tomorrow?
Right on.
So Dave, why don't you tell everybody a little about yourself?
Well, I'm a front of house engineer and tour manager occasionally, and I live in Chicago. I wear a lot of different hats, you know. I'm a freelancer. I own a small sound company. I work in a bunch of different venues of different sizes, mostly sort of performing arts center type places here in Chicago. And yeah, I tour as much as I can, but I've mostly tour with like sort of world music artists. And the way they tend to tour, it's sort of a, you know, a one-off kind of thing. Like they come here on an album cycle and then they go to Europe and they use a European person, that kind of thing. So yeah. And I also work in a church and I do a fair amount of corporate stuff as well. A1 kind of general session kind of stuff. Right. So, you know, wearing a lot of hats and
as so many of us do.
That's right.
Yeah. And you've got, so I'm assuming, cause I have been running around like crazy on that fashion show this week and haven't had time to dig deep into the Google, but I know one of the acts on your resume is Femi Kuti, which I'm assuming is a descendant of Fela.
Yeah, it's Fela's oldest son, and he was the last. Okay. My last tour was nice. Actually 22 with him, and we did a nice long run in the States, and then we did a run in Europe. But we did the Hollywood Bowl, we did for the Jazz Fest, and we did like some big festivals, you know. Bonnaroo. We did Bonnaroo, which, you know, it's pretty wild to go in there with, you know, it's all pop music and whatnot to show up with a 13-piece, you know, African band that sounds like a cross between, you know, James Brown and Bob Marley to anybody who doesn't know.
Dude, you know? Awesome.
Yeah.
And I mix him really dry because there's so much going on. There's percussion, there's horns, there's background singers, there's... So I use almost no effects. And so like the really, really ethereal pop music before us and after us, you know, we show up there and it just cuts. It's just like everybody's head turns. Like, what is this clear, clean, you know, music that's so different than anything else? So it's a lot of fun.
Dude, I bet that is super fun. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And in that case, at Bonnaroo, I had a SD10 file. They had an SD12. We could not convert it. Could not make it happen. It was something to do with firmware or whatever. Like, you know, the house guy who knew everything about Digico could not make it work. So I had to 40 inputs, had to dial it in on the fly, no sound check, because we're, you know, playing in the afternoon. You know, second stage. Made it happen. You know, just threw everything to nominal and dialed in gain and high pass and, you know, went from there. And since I don't do effects anyway, you know, it's like, so then it's just
that
a matter
makes it
of,
for sure.
And it was a bunch of K2 and K3, you know, so with a Digico and a bunch of.
Before or after, know, they sorted out the drivers in K3?
That's a good question. I think it may have been before, but it sounded great to me. So.
Okay,
all right, work. It was pretty early on. In K3.
Yeah, and is Hollywood Bowl the one that's got like the really wacky like sound level restrictions because of the neighborhood it's in?
Well, it does. And it's tricky. But they have it dialed in really well. And the L acoustics there are aimed really, really well. It is a low decibel limit, like a lot of public outdoor venues in the, you know, especially in Europe, but also here. Like, I've been to Pritzker Pavilion here in Chicago a bunch of times. I've worked in there a bunch of times, and their decibel limit is 94 at front of house. And they have a bunch of
sneeze that loud.
Yeah, they have a bunch of, you know, D&B, you know, it's a gorgeous sounding system, but you can't actually use it. it's very tricky with a band like this that's so dynamic. And I've always been there with loud bands.
Yeah, there's got to be. So, as I say, there's got to be almost that much coming off the stage on some days.
Oh yeah, you know, and in New York it's the same. If you do like Central Park or Celebrate Brooklyn or something like that, it's the same thing. Really low decibel limits, and they love to book these loud bands. And it's like, it's a challenge. Yeah, I was with Femi in Paris at the Philharmonie, the Philharmonic Hall, and there the decibel limit was 92, I think. And it was so hard. And they had a ton of, you know, absolutely gorgeous sounding L acoustics as well, of course. You know, in France, they're going to have a bunch of brown boxes. And Yeah, and they had an SSL console, and I'd never even seen one in person, let alone tried to mix on one. And they have such weird logic to them, you know. So I had to figure out how to make those things work, you know, on the fly. You know, at least we had a.
But they sound so good, dude.
Oh, it sounds awesome! It sounds incredible.
Oh, dude, I had the same experience. I walked in and was like mixing this band. It was an L250, I think. And I was like, I am lost. And I looked at the house guy. I was like, how do I? And he was like, all right, we're talking about groups instead of this. We're talking about stems instead of that and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, I walked through and I was like, okay, cool. And so I kind of got to it. I brought the band up and I was like, that's where we're starting? Like, that's where we're starting from? He's like, I know, right?
I basically high-passed.
They're sweet, but they are different to use for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They have their own logic for sure. And they sound great. It's true. You know, if I'd had another few decibels to work with, it would have been a lot better. They kept yelling
at me. More time to prep a show file.
They kept yelling at me in French. And I speak French, but I would kind of pretend I didn't understand what they were saying, which I've done a bunch. I did that in Montreal, too, with another low decibel limit. It's just like, what? I don't understand what you're saying. You
know, like, so funnily enough, the speaking French thing brings me back to Fashion Week for a second. So the show I did was at the Park Avenue Armory here in New York. And the last time I did Fashion Week in like 2009, 2010 was also there. And I don't remember what designer it was. I don't remember the design, but the lighting designer was French. And we're sitting there in rehearsal and they're programming the whole thing. And it was this whole weird concept where it was like literally just a line across the room of like 50 models with a parkhand focused down on each of them. And like the light would be dim on them, it would fade black on one. She would take this black smock off to reveal the outfit she was wearing, and the light would come up on her, and it would just go down the line. And as they're sitting there programming it, there's just like you hear back and forth from like three corners of the venue, just angry, angry, angry French chattering and yelling over comm. But you're here for like 5 minutes straight, and then you hear dead silence, and you hear the light designer say, "Oh, I've just been told the lighting programmer does not speak French. I am sorry. Let's try again in English." And that was the last time I did fashion for 15 years.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and like during the show, like he's sitting there and he's like calling the lighting cues to the guy, which are literally just one down the line. It's fairly straightforward. He's calling them like he's a TV director, like saying go and snapping at the same time, except he wasn't actually in sync with himself, let alone with what. So he'd be like, go. And the programmer board op is like trying to figure out what to take the go on or just take it off himself, and just
take a snap
in the middle of this like dead quiet, like ambient music fashion show, you just hear this quiet, angry French, You're fucking up the whole show. To the point that 14 years later, I was loading in at a venue over the summer, walked into a room and heard somebody in a French accent starting to say, "You are fucking all up." And I'm like, "Oh my God, Fashion Week 2010 at the Armory." And he's like, "Yes, you were there." It was like that infamous a moment. But anyway, speaking French sent me off on that tangent. So thanks for coming on that ride with me.
Well, that's so, actually kind of how I got into the scene of touring with African bands, is I spoke a little French. And this band Bombino, they had a record produced by Dan Auerbach, and suddenly they're being booked at Coachella. And so their management was a friend on Facebook, and he was like, "Hey, do I know anybody who does sound and speaks French?" And I'm like, me. So, you know, ended up my second show with them at Coachella. Moi. Yeah, moi.
You're like, that sounds like a double day rate. I'm in, dog. One for sound, one for French.
That's right. That's it.
If only it was that easy, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I had kind of overestimated my abilities with French, so I know a lot more now after spending a lot of time in vans with these guys and at airports and hotels and backstage.
Yeah, right. And now all the slang to go with it.
Yeah.
I can't decide if that's better or worse than overestimating your ability to mix the band. I think it's better.
it's better.
I think.
Yeah. But it was a interesting way to get into, you know, that particular scene. You know, I became the guy who could speak a little French and could tour these African dudes. So, you know.
Dude, how cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a fun ride. I'm tired of tour managing though. I'm looking for my next tour to move into the being just a front of house guy.
Gotcha. Well, let us know when to ship the white gloves.
That's it. I'm getting fitted for white gloves. And,
yeah, we'll get a little we'll get a little mini pelican case made for them.
And, that's right.
Wait. Did you say they you own a sound company in Chicago?
I do. Yeah. I mean, it's small.
Yeah. Yeah. Then those white gloves that you put on are already filthy, bro. Like,
it's true.
You're like, oh man, I'm the boss. I'm the owner, the leader. This is going to be great. I'm going to be working twice as hard as everybody else. Got it. Okay, sweet.
You know what I mean? It's true. It's very true. You know, especially these days where it's awfully hard to find good talent to work for you.
Yeah. I was going to say, and you own your own company, and then you also work for recent guest TC Furlong as well, you were saying, right?
I do. Yep, yep.
Dude, that guy was rad.
Yeah, I've worked for him for years and years and years, although I've only worked with him a few times. But I've worked for his company for many years, yeah.
I feel like a lot of those, like, old school, like, named after a person companies, it's like, they're like when I was in college in Boston, like, I worked for Terry Hanley Audio tons of times. I worked with Terry, like, once.
Right.
Which was fun because the other guy who I did most of his gigs with was very particular about certain things in the exact opposite way that Terry was very.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, TC like as a company are very particular, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Like they're the folks who insisted to me the first time to use the word lectern instead of podium. And they had a whole lecture about how
my kind of pet ants.
Which I'm like, yes. You know, you stand behind a lectern, you stand on top of a podium. It's Latin, for God's sake. Huh? You know,
learn something new every day. All right, thanks.
Yeah, although I've learned recently that I forget whether it's Oxford or Merriam-Webster's no longer backs us up because the whole descriptive versus prescriptive thing with dictionaries, and like everybody knows what you mean. It's just they both mean the same thing now.
It's true,
but
man,
yes, I'm with you. I keep the annotated photo in my phone to send to people, which
I get it, but at the same time, like some of that stuff matters. Like in this particular case, it may not be a big deal, but sometimes that makes a big difference. Where you're like,
right,
lectern or podium. If it were a very specific use case, it would make a difference. Whereas, like,
right.
In general, corporate, we all know what you mean, bro. It's the frickin' podium. You know what I mean? But like,
if the client says podium, I'll stay podium. Say podium. You know,
totally. But I start with you're not gonna like get snippy with the client about it's a lectern. You know what I mean? Like, great. When you're still fired over something that doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Actually, it's a Weber strip, not a Weber strip.
Yeah. Right.
I had a boss who totally would say Weber strip.
Well, as long as you know the brand, but yeah, I see people write it on specs as Weber strip. And I'm like, nope, it's Weber. There's an A in there.
I don't see that used much as a generic anymore.
Yeah, here in like the New York theater world, it tends to still, it comes around a lot. I've actually developed a habit recently of like when we have a debate about how a company's pronounced, I'll just straight up call their customer support line. And hear the first word on the voicemail that picks up and then hang up and be like, see, it's Aviom, not Aviom.
It is?
Apparently.
Dude, I saw their new box at NAMM.
Yeah.
Man, that new box is pretty freaking sweet, dude. And it's super easy to navigate.
I've seen it.
Fucking squirrel side tangent. But it's, dude, the new, did you say Aviom or Aviom?
Aviom.
Aviom. The new Aviom box is freaking dope. It was like, I've been looking for our studio for a new headphone system because the one we got is not as cool, let's say. And the Cat 5 options are the options we've got because that's the infrastructure.
Yeah.
Dude, it's so nice to be able to like look at it. I walked up and I was like, oh man, twirled a couple knobs and was able to figure it out. I'm like, oh man, the musicians could figure this out too if I can figure it out rather than like having to walk in and show everybody how the other headphone system works every single time. You're like, bro, we've all used this 100 times. You can't figure it out. They're like, oh, I don't know, man. You know what I mean?
Ooh, it's got a screen.
Dude, it is. Huh. It's like two big knobs. Like it's like a giant pair of old iPods where you're like, just squirrel.
Or like this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, it was super cool. I was stoked.
Nice.
Now I just got to call those guys and get them to sponsor our podcast because I said nice things.
There you go. There you go.
Only that's how that. If only that's how that worked, right? What?
Right.
They're like, yeah, man, we don't care. Like, yeah. 9,000 church installs. I don't care what your podcast.
Yeah. Right? So the other one recently was there's the video converter company that spelt AJA. That there's always the debate: do you pronounce it like the Steely Dan out? Like how do you? And so we were on a gig the other day and called, and they actually answered the phone as "Thank you for calling." Wait, was it Aja, AJA? I'm like, oh, they cover both bases, although not Asia and not Aja.
Not Aja.
Although, also, whoever answers their phone got a very weird call, because I did it expecting to get a voicemail menu like you do when you call Avion or most other companies, and just I would hang up, and an actual human answered the phone and said that, and I didn't have, like, I was so caught off guard by an actual human answering a phone in 2024 that I kind of fumbled the phone and just hung up in a panic instead of saying, actually, you've already helped answer the question I had because we just wanted to know how to say your name correctly. So if by weird chance that woman who answers the phone there is listening, I'm sorry for that weird call last week.
Nice.
And on that note.
No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Yeah. Before we got off on like four other tangents, we were talking about like sound limits, like particularly with a band that size, Dave, bringing us back on track. Like, do you have any particular tricks for navigating those with that many inputs, or is it like a case-by-case kind of thing?
It's a case-by-case thing. I'm all about DCAs, basically. I'm about having a band DCA and a vocal DCA and a effects DCA. You know, and I mix everything at nominal, and then I can ride the whole band and the vocal and, you know, fit myself into whatever the limit is, as long as that's possible with stage volume. I mean, luckily these guys were pretty good with stage volume, but still, you know, snares in a live space, for instance, like the Philharmonic Hall in Paris I was talking about, had an RT60 of a million, you know, I mean, it's a really, really, really live space. And
so the snare sounded dope, but came off the stage at like 110.
Exactly. Exactly. So if I could have mixed around it by
run into sound limits a lot?
I do, especially in Europe and in Canada. But any big city, if you're outdoors, pretty much you're going to run to it. Like I said, in New York, Celebrate Brooklyn or Central Park, you know, the events there.
Yep.
They have low limits. Chicago outdoors.
Do you resort depending to some on of the dirty tricks at, that some of us...
What's that?
Do you resort to some of the dirty tricks that the rest of us use where you bribe them with coffee or booze or snacks?
I have. When I did Celebrate Brooklyn, I made friends with a house guy. And and he just turned the attenuator down on the mic feeding the decibel meter.
That's what's up.
I may or may not know which person that was, depending on when it was.
He had a big beard.
Yeah,
I don't remember his name. But what's funny is I was with Bambino then, and the band after us was Femi Kuti, and somebody else was mixing them, and they were really, 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 really late. And so the whole house crew was really upset, and that guy did not get any breaks on the decibel limit that day.
He also did not buy the house crew a round of cold beers to make sure that he got what he needed, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and what's funny is just on the basis of the beard, I'm pretty sure I know exactly who that was.
Okay, he was a nice guy.
Yeah, I've had a few friends that have gone through the head position there over like the last decade or so.
Yeah, it was like 2015, 2014, something like that.
So. Yeah, that sounds about right. But I will not name the guilty party to get them into trouble.
Right. Yeah, he definitely did me a favor that day. But I don't. Nice. Then I've been in Canada before, where you'd think they're supposed to be polite for guys, and they are anything but polite about the decibel limit, and they're And when they're averaging over time and you have a band that plays 10-minute songs, it's easy to get in trouble and hit the limit. Oh. And then suddenly the next whole three songs have to be super quiet. And, you know, it's a tricky thing, and it's frustrating. you know, when you want to just mix balls out rock and roll loud. But
totally. Or when you're like, man, I don't need to be ripping loud, but I do need like two or three more freaking dB. Like, I just need just another 2 inches, bro. You know what I mean? Like, story of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Just two more inches in this thing, right?
That's it. Just
well, like, I could get there with like two more.
Well, Dave, have you ever played Switzerland? Because I know Ryan was posting the other day that like they are like, it's like jail time legally binding SPL.
Oh, limits. Yeah. Yep, exactly. That's true.
I wouldn't make it out alive, bro.
Parts of the EU, for sure. Like at that Philharmonic gig, they were very seriously pissed at me and like hanging over. They walked over and threw a big compressor on the back end, you know, just, you know, after they got tired of yelling at me and stuff. So, you know,
I guess it's better than turning it off altogether.
Right.
Maybe.
I mean, it's a 5,000 seat hall. You know, it was a big deal show.
So, like, 5,000 seat hall. They just strapped a Dominator straight across your whole friggin' thing.
Oh my God.
Is that what that was? That FX box that we used to use that was just like the hard limits and sounded like horrible when you hit it hard?
It was crunchy.
I mean,
but it was an SSL, so it sounded fine.
Yeah, it could work.
But yeah, you know, so I started in the industry in Michigan. I came up in the early, mid-90s, basically. And I had no idea what sound was. I was working as a cook, and I got fired from my cooking job, and I walked into a local bar where they had music on Friday and Saturday nights, and sat down to talk to my old buddy who was the house sound engineer. And I was on unemployment, right? And I was looking for cash work so I didn't have to go off of unemployment. And so I asked my buddy, you know, hey, so you know about any work I can do for cash so I can stay on the dole? And he's like, well, why don't you come down here every weekend and I'll teach you how to mix? And I'm like, oh, huh. Like, I didn't know the difference between an amp and a speaker at that point in my life. Like, I didn't know what an SM58 was. I didn't know how to recoil a cable, you know? And so I walked, you know,
that's basically. Okay. Andy doesn't know what an SM58 is either. He hasn't used it in a decade.
I do know what it is. That's why I haven't used it in a. I love you, Jason, if you're listening.
So he basically taught me a ton just on the Mackie 24x4 with a PV, you know, Black Widow speakers.
Yeah.
You know, with all these bands from Detroit and Chicago, like really amazing bands would come up to this Northern Michigan club and play. It was great because they'd play a whole weekend. They'd sound check once, they'd tear down once, do, you know, so you could really dial them in. And
nice.
And it was a great place to learn. And then he also worked for this guy who had a regional sound company there in Michigan. And, you know, old school cat who had built all his own speakers, you know, still analog days. So he had a PV Mark VIII as his main front of house console, which was actually a really old sounding console, other than the fact it didn't have variable high pass filters. So, you know, we would have to cover up the PV logo with gaff tape just to, you know, just so when visiting engineers stepped up to it, they'd be like, oh, this doesn't meet my rider, you know, like, PV, how dare you, you know, like, where's my Midas, you know. But it was actually a great, great sounding board, and the PA he built was like a four-way JBL front-loaded system. And, you know, it's a little underpowered compared to today, but it sounded great. And so that's working for that sound company is where I learned tons more stuff. That was essentially my, you know, my version of going to school. This guy, Bob Farmer, he made all his own cables and he was very, very old school, but you know, he taught me everything I needed to know about.
Pin 3.
What's that?
I said pin 2 or pin 3.
Right.
Or was that after that had been settled?
You know, I think it's after that was settled. But yeah. But he was like doing multi-pin, you know, cables and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, it was fun. I learned how to rig, and I learned, you know, about electrical, and, you know, all the needed information, you know. And basically he didn't want to mix. We'd be doing some festival, and he'd like just make sure the PA was up, and then he'd wander off, and I, you know, got to, you know, spend a lot of time out in front of house. So that's really where my skills all came from. And then I decided to move to Chicago because I wanted to work, you know, everything was seasonal in Michigan. There's, you know, lots of festivals in the summer, but, you know, I wanted to work all the time and not at a bar. You know, it was a little performing arts center too that I worked at, but it was like, no, I'm going to go move to Chicago. And the first week I got here, I started working at DB Sound and at this place, the Old Town School of Folk Music, where I'm at now, which is sort of my main house gig. It's a 450 cap room. And it's great. It's the deadest room on the planet. And we've got a proprietary rig in there that I can't wait. We're soon going to get D&B, and I can't wait.
Nice.
Nice.
But it sounds, you know, the proprietary rig, it's all Rankus Hines components. It sounds good. I tell visiting engineers, don't look at the horns they're out of boxes, and the low mids are an 18 surrounded by the high mids are little eights, and then the highs are horns out of boxes. And it looks like somebody's 1970s, you know, audiophile, you know, home stereo, you know, blown up. So it actually doesn't sound bad, but it's not going to sound, it doesn't sound as good as the D&B is going to sound.
Yo, man, you paint that horn like a bright pink or purple or something. All the EDM kids love that shit. They'll pay triple for it.
Yeah, right. Like Void or something like that.
You know? Yeah, we'll call it Function Half. Right?
Totally.
That's where I was going.
I was there with you, some Turbo Sounds, yeah. Function 1.
Yeah,
That's it. Yeah, those EDM kids. I mean,
there was like a whole
stuff.
Period in like Broadway where like, yeah, raw horns were like a huge thing.
Right.
Like, yeah, like the original Phantom designs, like all that Martin Levan, like he was big on that. And depending on what you're trying to do with it, it can work really well. You just got to work within the limits of what you can do with it.
Right. And, you know, this venue.
That's like.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say I don't think this ever made it into the rock world, but a thing that was like big in theater touring for a while, up to and including like one of the more recent tours of Chicago that just closed a few years ago was Bullet Tweeters. Like, did that ever make it into rock stuff?
Yeah.
Like, where you would, it was literally just a tweeter, no horn, nothing, on like a little like K&M like clamp arm on the top of the speaker tower. That would just put that little bit of extra high end to like the far, far corners of the theater. And it's one of those, you look at it and it's like, this seems batshit crazy. And you'd listen to it and you'd be like, that sounds terrible right here. But then you put it on the tower and like, you know, you'd go up to the back corner and listen and have somebody like pan it up to you. And you're like, holy shit, that just did that little that was needed.
Was that a chef's kiss?
Yeah, it was.
All right, word.
Oh, sorry, but you were starting to say something else, and then I went off on history tangent.
In this venue, like when they initially designed it, you know, it's a folk music school, so they assumed everybody who was going to play there was going to be, you know, folk music. But, you know, they book everybody. It's all kinds of stuff. It's rock and roll. It's you know, lots of sort of Americana, alt country kind of stuff, like a lot of world music. So, I mean, it made sense when they installed it, considering what they thought it was going to be. But, you know, and it works okay. But I am definitely looking forward to, you know, to D&B. And, you know, it'll make life easier there, for sure. Especially for the visiting engineers. Because, you know, like, I know the system really well in this room. But other people walk in and they're just like, how do I, what? What? This doesn't sound modern at all, you know? Like, how do I make things sound great in here? You know? So.
Totally.
Yeah, that's a cool venue I work at. And I'm at It's a little place called Space that's in Evanston. That's got a nice Meyer rig in there and get some decent touring acts.
Touring all the brands.
Yep. I love Meyer. It's one of the reasons I like to work for TC Furlong. It's they're a Meyer house. And then I have this crazy church gig as well. It's a gospel church, you know, big, huge venue. And it's, I am the only white guy in the room. And, and it's pretty wild to be invited into that, you know, like the pastor there is this guy named Smokey Norful. And if I tell anybody who's African American and grew up in the church where I work, they say, "You work for Smokey Norful?" It's like it's like saying you work for, you know, like it's Al Green or something. Like he's a Grammy Award winning guy. Like,
dude, how
he's cool. A huge deal. And nobody, like, I say that to anybody who looks like us, and they're like, "Who? That's a funny name," you know. But it's kind of cool. It's like it's very modern gospel music. It sounds like R&B, basically, you know, like modern R&B. And I mostly do the broadcast mix there. And it's cool to be invited in. Like I'm not a religious person at all, you know. But it's cool to be in the room with people that are, you know, it's a big part of people's lives. And, you know, it's a cool gig because I can go and do that in the morning, then I can work a club gig at night.
Totally. Double dipping.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes for a nice easy
What are you doing for the broadcast over there? What kind of rig are you using for broadcast?
Well, they got an Allen & Heath D-Live at front of house, and then they've got a GLD, I think, in broadcast. Yeah, it's a GLD. And then they've got, it's all Dante. And they've got a Wave server. So there's, you know, all kinds of fun stuff you can do. And we're recording to Logic, and I'm not exactly sure what his output is. But it's cool. You know, I mean, you know, using the Waves rack.
But you got a console with a Waves server to make the broadcast mix.
Right. Exactly. So that's where I'm cool. At. You know, and it just.
Are you in a separate room or are you having to do that from the main thing? No, your separate room?
Separate room.
So sweet. Well, that makes it easier.
Just throw in my cans and, you know, and it's cool. And I've gotten to the point where I really know what they like it to sound like.
Yeah, totally.
You know, which took a while. You know, they had to. Like, no, we want more bass than that. You know, turn those drums up. Come on.
Right.
You know, stuff like that.
Right, totally.
It's just an aesthetic thing. But it's cool because I've never been much of a studio guy. I've almost always been a live guy. So spending time in a studio type environment. I mean, this was one of those like COVID was just ending, right? We're just starting to come back. But like corporate world wasn't quite back yet, and music world was sort of catching up. So when I was able to find this church gig, it was like it was a lifesaver. It's cool.
Oh yeah, dude, totally.
Totally. So
man, as somebody who came, I was a studio guy that turned into a live guy and still does some studio work. I've been having to unstudio my live mixes. You know what I mean? Because like it's very different. You know, do you find yourself doing things differently to inputs on your broadcast than you would live?
Oh yeah. Like, you know, live, I'm a cut only kind of guy for the most, you know, in general, like if I can, I want to make something sound right, it's generally with cuts and of course in a studio, you don't have to worry about feedback. So you can,
bro, I'm a booster. You
know? Yeah.
Totally. In the studio,
in the studio,
live, I got to cut the boost down to like a dull roar. You know what I mean? But
it's
crazy.
Yeah.
The difference.
So you can really, you can really do some extreme EQing, and you know, there's definitely some fun Waves plugins that I would never use in a live situation, you know. Or there's like, you know, putting gates on everything, you know, just to try and tighten up. You know, that's something I would never do live, you know.
Totally. And after rehearsal, you can get some virtual playback going, so you can really dial some of that stuff in tighter. You know what I mean? And really have it happen, which is nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been cool. And, you know, lots That's more awesome. Use of groups and stuff like that than I necessarily do live. You know, it depends. But I do like subgroups on some consoles and in some situations live. But if I have enough aux, you know, whatever they call it on whatever console. But yeah, it's been a good learning experience. And yeah, so my company, like I said, it's real small. It's speakers on a stick only. My motto is that if I can't fit it in my car, I don't want to own it. I'll rent it, you know, but I don't want to own it. Because the return on investment is fantastic on a pair of K-12s, right?
You know? Yeah, it is.
you know, for a couple of years now, my main console has been a Touch Mix, you know, a QSC Touch Mix. And why not? 16 inputs. You got all the EQ you might want. It's got gates. It's got comps. You know, the only thing it doesn't have that I would like is a matrix. You know, and, but it's if you know, that's my whole philosophy is just like keep it small, keep it simple, you know. And I'm slowly upgrading. Philosophy. You know, like I don't want to. You know, would I love to own a Line Array? You know, of a major brand. No. Would I love to own a Digico?
You'd love to have ready access to
you
one. Know?
You would yeah, love yeah, to yeah. Own. Love your friend. It's like Line Arrays are like swimming pools, bro. You love it when your friends own one.
Right.
But if you can you not have to own one, you can just go borrow it from your buddy. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
I think we just found a new sticker we got to get printed. Oh,
totally. Totally. Because as somebody who owns both, 12-inch utility speakers, like a K-12, or we've got the RCF NX32s right now, which we love. They're like little cash machines. You just carry those things around and they print money for you. You know what I mean? Just like print all day long. Print. And then you get a Line Array and you got to do those size shows. What? Yeah. Sorry?
Oh, I said I have an EV12 and a horn.
Sure, man. Yeah. Powered same kind of thing, though. But just print all day long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you get a Line Array and you get all the other stuff that has to go with it. And you're like, well, I mean, the check is larger, but the profit margin is not larger. You know what I mean? It does not scale with the profit margin. So, like,
right.
You know, a few rentals literally pays for a K-12 or an NX32 or whatever. You know what I mean? You've literally paid this box off, and it's just paying itself off every couple rentals every time it goes out, whereas like a Line Array, you're like, all right, so 20 to 50 to 100 rentals later, this thing will pay itself off, and then I can think about more, and then, shoot me in the face, bro. Like, just shoot me in the face.
Yeah, yeah. One crazy one for me is RF. Like, RF is so expensive. It's so crazy, you know? Like...
And then the FCC changes the rules.
Right.
Those sons of bitches.
Right, right.
That's everybody's like, no, it costs so much to rent. I want to buy it. And it's like, no, you don't. You really don't.
You know, like, I don't know. Axient should be around for a while, I would guess. But
God, I would hope so.
Go outside, turn around 3 times, spit curse and all the things.
But, you know, like,
right.
Like I have ULXD because I can't imagine going lower than that, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's killer box.
It's fine. It's usable even in New York or Chicago or whatever, you know, depending on your band. But it's like, I would love Axient, but it's just so cost prohibitive, you know? Like,
yeah. Totally.
I was doing more corporate stuff. Dude. It's fine. It, you know, as long as, like, I did this choir show a couple years ago where it was 14 people, and everybody had their own. Excuse me, 58 ULXD G50, and we were in downtown Chicago. And I literally could not do 12 channels of ULXD downtown at brutal. All. Like, it just was not possible. You know, I'm like, you know what? Those, you know, the choir, we're going to use wired mics, and then people can come up and use the wireless for solos, but.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the only way to make it work. But yeah, it's one nice thing about being in Chicago is being close to Shure, actually. So I have a pretty good relationship with people over there. I've been able to do some beta testing that I can't talk about.
You should get a homie deal, dude, for being a neighbor. You're like, where's the neighbor deal, dog?
He just said he's got totally. Secret microphones you can't tell us.
There you go, perfect. I like it.
Yeah, it's been, you know, I took off on tour with some mics that had no labels on them whatsoever. Like, they didn't have a nice name. They came straight out of the lab. You know, like
I helped Leo Pisak out with a wedding gig this summer, and he and his kid had one that he's like, I'm not into. This might be what they just came out with. This might be the next thing. I'm not entirely sure. I don't know what it is. Part of it's 3D right. printed. It sounds amazing.
Right.
Nice.
Exactly.
God, I hope we're not getting you and Leo in trouble now.
Well, I think I'm being vague enough to be okay with the NDA. But it's kind of cool, totally. You know.
But it is nice to know that you think Accent will be around for a while, even with the new, you know, stealth hotness coming in, because like all of us went deep, like elbows deep into Accent when it came out, and it still are, because it's just the tool that all our clients are asking for, you know what I mean?
Well, it's the one you know you can count on, you know. On my for rider, sure. I'm not gonna, you know, I would okay a ULXD, but not happily, you know, and anything else would just be. You'd be surprised how many of these, the sort of performing arts center type venues would be like, oh, well, what we have is a UHFR. You know, I'm like, well, yeah, then you're going to rent me an Accent. You know, exactly. You know, you're going to rent me an Accent or a, you know, ULXD, because I am not trusting a UHFR. Sorry.
Yeah, they were great in their time. They're just, they're a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah,
but they're still out there. I still keep seeing lots of people. Like, I do run a Workbench 6 primarily because 7 doesn't support the UHFR anymore.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't really like
that. I know other people running 6 because 7 only has dark mode. So for the summer, you have to switch over to 6 when you do outdoor gigs.
I don't like the functionality of 7. I don't like the way it feels. I don't like the workflow.
I couldn't get it to connect to the freaking network. I don't know that makes me a ding-dong, bro, but like, I must be just not that smart. Like, load 6, no problems. ULXD, Accent, PSM-1000s, it all shows up, doesn't care, nothing to change, it's all happy. Right. Try to load 7, nothing. Can't. There's no network setting I can get to make 7 work for me.
Yeah, the last time I used it, there was a little bit of a learning curve, and I don't even remember what I tripped over. They've definitely made some improvements, and I'll say I a very old friend is the product manager for that, so if he's listening, I know he's doing some hard work to try and freshen it up and do some cool things with it. So I'm optimistic to see where it's going with that particular person in charge.
Me too, because I got enough things to learn how to network into the new network manager thinger fucking fuck that doesn't work is not the things I got to learn right now. You know what I mean? Like, 6 is working. 6 is where I'm staying until 7 is like turnkey, like 6. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, I just finally moved past Windows 98, so I feel it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I mean,
not quite that bad, but like in the Broadway world, it was like we were pushing like XP along, like as long as I think we skipped Win 7 almost entirely in the Broadway world, and then eventually went kicking and screaming into 10. So I feel that.
I mean, to be fair to Shure, and I love Shure, I've got more Shure microphones that in our company than anything else, right? So I'm not dogging them, but like, to be fair to this 6.7 thing, I am still on a 2012 MacBook Pro with Catalina. So it's probably just like, yo, dog, you and your old ass computer are just, you're out, dog. You're out. You know what I mean? Get something that was made in this decade. It may be me and not sure at all.
Factor.
Yeah, it may be me and not sure at all.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I have a late 2015 MacBook Pro because, you know, everybody loves them.
Because they're $4,500 for a new fucking computer. I'm not doing it. I'm too cheap.
This one has HDMI out. The one I'm talking about right now. And two actual USB ports. You know, USB-A.
I was going to say, because my last Intel one sitting on the shelf, which is the first one that when I've upgraded, I haven't sold or traded in, was still all USB-C. As I unfortunately gave away the full-size ports in the HDMI a while ago, but yeah, last year was the year of finally doing the Apple Silicon.
How is it?
Excuse me, Apple Silicon. I went to the 13-inch Air. I a little bit wish I had held out till the 15-inch Air came out a couple months later. I knew it was coming, but Also, totally stupid reasons. I had a business like Delta Card that had an intro offer that was going to push me over right at the tail end of the deadline to earn like 100 or whatever thousand bonus miles.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Get in the 13. The 13 will be great.
There you go.
And then I always make sure they rent me a large external monitor and I'm good to go.
There you go. I'm so far behind. Everything I've got is still like 2012, 2013 MacBook Pros because I've just look at them and go, fuck, dude, I can't put it on a line item in an invoice as easily as PA or something. You know what I mean?
Right. Yep.
I had a deep conversation with my accountant about like, okay, so explain like depreciable versus not to me with all these purchases the last couple of years.
Uh-huh. Yeah, dude, totally.
Which a teaser, I'm not sure exactly when, but we're having my now retired accountant on at some point in the future to dig into some
dude, cool.
Audio tax stuff.
That's on brand nerdery for my ass. I'm ready for that, dude.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
that's something we're working on coming up that I'll tease for folks. I'm not necessarily in time for the imminent tax season this year, but we'll at least let you know what you screwed up so you can unscrew it for next year.
Thanks a lot, Andy. I'm a dollar short every time.
Accountants are busy right now, and he's in the middle of retiring and selling his practice. Yeah. So he's been a little hard to get a hold of. But I talked to him last week, and he's down as soon as we can figure out when. Dave. I mean, before we wrap up, we brought out some of the classic questions last time around, and I think we should bring those back more often. So, if you could go back in time and tell young Dave some piece of advice that you know now that you wish you knew then, what would it be?
Oh, find a different career. I don't know. Lift with your knee, you know, don't lift with your back. How about that?
Yeah. You've only got one body.
You've only got one body. You're going to be 51 someday and really regret all that jumping off of stage.
I regret it 43. I made. Yep. I say I'm 42 and I'm not as young as I used to be by any means,
dude. Totally. I remember clearly the day in the truck where I was going to double stack the subs and I was like, can I get a hand on this? You know what I mean? Where you were like, used to be Superman. And then you were like, I'm going to need a friend on this one.
it was about 4.5 or 5 years ago when I got a cold. I had a cough and I realized that I can cough hard enough to throw my back up for a week years old. That I was like, oh boy.
Totally.
Adult life. Outside, at a certain point, those prescriptions are the same. Yeah. They're like, here, just take some codeine. It'll solve it all. Right. Like, here's a recipe for purple drink if you need it.
Yeah, right.
So speaking of crazy drink concoctions, okay, the other question, we're coming to visit you in Chicago. Where are we eating?
Oh, wow.
And you're lucky you're not our first Chicago guest, so I'm not going to, as the New Yorker, give you shit about pizza because I've already done that. Yeah,
I heard
folks.
You talk to TC about the pizza situation, and I had my opinion.
I mean, I felt validated that the one I like is the one TC liked too, so.
No, and it's a good one. I think you said Pequod's, right? Is that right?
Yep.
As I recall? Yeah, and that's good. I'm all about what's called tavern pizza here. I can't remember if that even came up, but it's its own thing.
No, but I feel like I've
heard about this. Do tell. Talk dirty.
Well, it's flat. It's crackery. It's kind of greasy, and you literally have to go to the north side to some tavern, and they make them. They cut them in squares for some reason. That's the Midwestern thing. And it's both greasy and crackery at the same time. But I would take you guys.
Episode 300, Chicago.
That's right. Let's do it.
That's right. I live in this crazy neighborhood here in Chicago that's like the most diverse neighborhood in the country. It's kind of like Queens, but even more diverse because it's super compact. It's like parts of Queens. People around here are from all over the world, literally. And so we have these incredible restaurants, super cheap, like, excuse me, super, interesting varieties of stuff. We have way more Mexican food than you all have in New York, that's for sure.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Like really super, like very regional specific types of Mexican food. So we all have favorites of like, this is the place I go to for Al Pastor, but you know, if you want carne asada, go to this other one because they're better and stuff like that. But all kinds of stuff, you know. I went to this Kazakhstani restaurant the other day that's open super late. It's like, it's open at like midnight or one or something like that. And like, what? Oh, this like great soup and bread. So anyway, I would take you around my neighborhood if y'all came to Chicago. Nice.
Oh man, you're making me nostalgic. There used to be in Hell's Kitchen, like on 9th Avenue in the 50s here in New York, there was an Afghan like Uyghur kebab place that was at one point open 24 hours.
Yeah.
And I remember like coming off a gig at like midnight and like rolling in there at 2 a.m. and getting like fresh, like steaming hot, like on the big metal skewer that looks like a sword. Shit, that like,
yeah, dude. Sword make, kebabs?
Oh, like making the mistake of like eating it off the skewer and not realizing how hot the skewer is till it touched the corner of my lips.
Yeah.
And
it's
like, oh, whoa.
Yeah, my favorite.
That's better than Domino's, bro.
Absolutely.
My favorite Persian place is also open super late. And, you know, that's the best. This stuff is excellent.
Bro, sword skewers?
That's awesome. Well, I'll throw in one other Manhattan pro tip for late night is there is Desi Deli on 10th and like 52nd-ish is a 24-hour Indian deli that was literally started by cab drivers who wanted, like, when they were switching their shift at like 2 in the morning, wanted real food. So it's like, it's legit Indian that, like, you can, you know, when you're sitting at the bar at like 1 a.m. in that last hour, you're like, I need food. You can walk two blocks down from the whiskey bar and get, like some nice, like, still steaming hot Indian food. And it's fantastic.
I've never had a hard time finding food late at night.
I'm going to Chicago for Tavern Pizza, bro.
But I've never had a hard time finding late night food in New York. There's, you know, always deli to be had or a slice of pizza.
Sometimes it gets a little harder post pandemic, but.
Oh,
not
really?
Too hard.
Okay, that's sad to hear.
A little bit. Some of the really good places close, but there's enough is open back up now. Although that same neighborhood, the whiskey bar that I'm a regular at, there's a deli there that my lighting designer friend Herrick insists is the single best bacon, egg, and cheese in all of Manhattan. And don't know that he's wrong. It's pretty solid. They're one of those places that at like you walk in the wrong time of morning at like about 3:30, 4 a.m. and there's that period where you try and order anything on the grill and they're like, can't for another hour because the entire grill is covered with bacon to get ready for the morning rush.
Oh wow, yeah.
It's like the entire block smells like bacon and it's just
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. Cool. Well, Dave, it's been really cool, like finally meeting you, you know, at least virtually face to face after knowing your name online for so long. And I'm
right on.
Glad you reached out and said, hey, and if there's other folks out there listening, they're like, I've got cool stories. I want to come on. Like, tell us. Like,
we're friendly mostly.
Yeah, we're hustling every week to like find folks. And like, y'all get tired of hearing of all my friends. So if folks have cool stories, like, shoot us an email. Signal2Noise, the number 2, so signal2Noise at prosoundweb.com, and say hey, let us know what you got, and we might call you and be like, hey, what are you doing tomorrow?
Cool. That's what's up. Nice to meet you, Dave. Thanks for hanging out and partying, dude. I appreciate
absolutely.
You. Absolutely. I'm definitely coming for Tavern Pizza, bro. That's
I'm going to throw a link in the show notes because I'm pretty sure Kenji on Serious Eats did like a whole deep dive into both the history of Tavern Pizza and like if you're nerdy enough to like want to make it at home, like did all the tests to figure out how to like perfectly recreate it. So
it's not Detroit pizza. Detroit pizza, I think, is the height of all pizza. Personally,
Detroit's like, pretty solid. Which is why we like the Chicago place we do, because they're almost Detroit.
It's like almost it's Detroit. Pequod's is almost.
I'm not hip to this Detroit thing. Are we on a pizza tour right now? Are we starting a pizza world tour, bro?
So Detroit pizza, similar to Chicago in that it's like a vaguely deep dish, but it's they bake it in like the little like metal part tins like they would use in the car factories. So it's a little square that's like, you know, maybe like like 4x8, 5x10 inches rectangle. And it's like that thick black metal. So they put, it's like maybe halfway up the tin is dough. And then it's, they specifically use Wisconsin brick cheese on the top, and they layer it the rest of the way up. So it's got tons of cheese. And because it's that really dark metal, it gets crazy hot and caramelizes the edge. So half of the crust is just caramelized cheese.
Yum!
And then it's the upside down with like the cheese on the bottom and the sauce on top. If anybody's going through New York, down on 23rd, there's a place called Lions and Tigers and Squares.
Oh, my.
Yeah, which is not only one of the best names for a pizza place ever, but as, does, like, Detroit-style
as a Michigan native, pies. I feel drawn to that immediately, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can highly recommend the pepperoni pizza there. Yeah, well, now that we've made everybody hungry, myself included, I'm going to go get a late lunch.
Yeah.
I think I have time to eat before load in. So.
Nice. Dave, thanks for ripping.
All right.
Good to see everybody else as always. Thank you to Alan Heath and RCF for rocking with us. We appreciate you guys big time. We'll catch you guys on the next one. That's the pod.
What's up for everybody? Wow. And we've already got something for the blooper reel. Love it.